teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. This is Sheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at MEC Sharks and Twitter at Sheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on Twitter at halfwall_hockey, at my website half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. It's a special Christmas episode, Sheng.
Yes, happy holidays, everybody. And we've got Stephen Ellis. He's the prospect analyst for Daily Faceoff. He's going to tell us all about the six Sharks prospects at the World Junior Championships, which are starting on the 26th. And he's also going to tell us why he's so high on Will Smith.
It's an amazing interview with Stephen Ellis. I didn't do a good enough job hyping him up in the beginning, but it really was an awesome discussion. So stick around for that. It's going to be towards the end of the episode. It's going to be a very fun World Juniors for everybody. But this week, what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk a little bit about the Sharks' recent play and some of the rising play from players like Zadina. We're going to talk about Couture and Sturm news. We're going to talk about a recent interview with Chris Morehouse, the director of amateur scouting for the Sharks, and his thoughts on some of the Sharks' prospects, including the ones going to World Juniors.
And your thoughts finally, on the preseason games.
And I'm gonna I've been watching a lot of the World Juniors preseason games, and they've been a ton of fun, and got some thoughts for that. And then finally, a Sharks Christmas wish list, then the interview. I am wearing a Team USA jersey this week.
Very jingoistic of you.
I mean, yeah, it's World Junior season.
USA.
Sharks have two USA prospects. They look like an amazing team that might go all the way.
I'm wearing my holiday shirt, so yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I'm just here,
for the cookies. That is what I'm so excited for tomorrow, is just the cookies, hanging out, put movies on, that kind of thing. So Merry Christmas to all.
Yeah. Bye. What are you watching tomorrow?
Probably Die Hard. I do watch Die Hard.
So you do consider it out a Christmas movie, which I do too, by the way. But yeah, I don't know why that's such a debate. So yeah.
I think it's just to bring Die Hard back into cultural relevancy, you know? And people just want to talk about Die Hard because it's an amazing movie. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Sharks this week, who were bad, but maybe some bright spots. Sheng, what was going on this week?
Yeah, I think the one guy who stands out as a bright spot is Philip Zadina, reinserted back onto the top line with Tomáš Hertl. I think he's come out the last two games with a goal and two assists, I think. Anyway, it's not even just about necessarily the production, but he's just been all over, very helpful part of that line. You notice him when he's out there, which is in a good way here. He's not doing too much, but when he is doing something, it's usually something that on the more positive side. Noticed him, of course, over the last couple of weeks or so. I just wrote an article actually right before he got promoted, and David Quinn was talking about how there's been no BS in Zadina's game, just a very direct forechecking, backchecking game, which I highlighted in an article a few days ago with a bunch of clips that I've been collecting since the Detroit game. And he was on the fourth line for all of these games. But, you know, I think one of the things about Zadina that strikes me about his recent play and what got him promoted is a lot of times I feel like fans get really they really get agitated if like their favorite prospect or whatever gets shuffled off to the fourth line. The fourth line is not ideal, obviously, if you're a more offensive player and you're looking to produce and you're expected to produce, but you can still make an impact from there. And Zadina did. Zadina only had two assists in his seven games on the fourth line, but he was doing a lot of other things that that got the attention of the coaches and got him back on the first line, where now he's in a position to produce with Tomas Hertl and William Eklund. Mm-hmm. And so you can still impress in limited minutes. And I think a lot of times, I do think that fans give their favorite prospects too much of a break. Like, oh yeah, he just was on the fourth line, he didn't have a chance. Your chances aren't as great on there for sure. There's no doubt. But you know, overcoming your environment, right? That's what you have to do in any situation as an athlete. And so if your environment is a fourth line environment, not the most conducive for producing, well, do other things to impress the coaches. And that's exactly what Zadina did. So it's well deserved where he's at right now, and I hope it continues.
It'll be interesting to see if he sticks higher up in the lineup, kind of like Zetterlund did, where his play has been so consistently good or decent that he's stuck pretty high up in the lineup. And Zadina's moved and had the shuffle happen a couple of times. But hopefully this is kind of the final one that keeps him up higher, because that line looks good.
They look really good the last couple of games. And I want to add too that I think maybe a month ago or so, I had mentioned that I felt like for Zadina, he had to simplify. Mm-hmm. And then when you simplify, then good defense can lead to offense instead of just trying to force offense all the time. And I felt like he was doing that since he's come back from his injury, and that he was letting the game kind of come to him a little bit more. And I think that's something that Zetterlund has shown since the beginning of the season. And so I think I had mentioned Zadina as sort of a very good bellwether player for in terms of David Quinn's impact as a coach. Like, if David Quinn can turn a Zadina into a valid, useful top nine NHL player, then David Quinn has pretty much shown that he is a good coach and he's the right coach for a rebuild. David Quinn turning William Eklund, I feel, is, and we've talked about this, is so driven by himself that it's going to be a little hard to ruin a William Eklund, because I think Eklund has a very just good sense of what works, what wins, that sort of thing, right? And so even if Eklund isn't perfect in all the details right now, like he you don't need to tell him twice, kind of, you know, he's that kind of guy. And you can put him in a not great environment and he has the mental kind of stoicism or whatever to rise above it. I think Zadina obviously has bounced around the last 5 years in Detroit. He doesn't always have the confidence, right? And that's been discussed a lot, that he's a guy that is really hard on himself, isn't always the most confident. And maybe a little bit too much of his identity has been tied into his goal scoring and his production. And so he's a guy that maybe has to like accept the fact that, hey, maybe he's not going to be a 30 goal guy, and that's okay. He can still be a really useful, productive NHL player. And so Zadina tops out as, let's say, a 20-ish goal guy, but he's also an incredible forechecker and backchecker, and he has the physical ability to do it. He skates well, good four-way mobility. He's underrated strong. He also has desire too. You know, he's a guy that does, he's not one of those, how do you say it, like soft, just wants to score kind of guys. You know, he really does want to win and be better. And so if he can change his game a little bit and change his mental approach, which I think he has done in the last month, and turn into a more complete NHL player, even if his production or his ceiling is lower than initially projected when he was drafted in 2018, then he's going to have a long NHL career. And again, that's a good example of what a coaching staff can do to help bring a guy along, not just Quinn, but also his assistants. I know Scott Gordon works with Zadina a lot, and other assistant coaches too. And so, yeah. And so I think it's a good test. And it looks like Zadina might be turning the corner. So yeah, he's had a good stretch here, but I know he's also had flashes in Detroit too. So I don't want to say he's there yet, but yeah, he's been really good the last 10 games or so.
Just really hope the flashes turn into a more consistent baseline of a top nine forward.
Exactly. That's what you're hoping, right? Right. Yeah, and that's what we talk about with Eklund, right? Like we felt confident about Eklund because the B game is there when the offense isn't there or he's being shut down offensively, right? There's still enough elements of his other game that it's worth keeping him in the lineup, at least in this Sharks lineup that is obviously not the deepest, right? Mm-hmm. But when Zadina is forcing it and turning it over and stuff like that, and then he's letting it affect the other parts of his game, then that's when a guy gets sat, right? And so if he has a good B game, then that'll give a chance for the A game to take over at times.
And so Zadina's kind of a little bit of a diamond in the rough for this past week or so. Ferraro had an amazing game that Quinn praised about because he had 3 assists against Vancouver.
Up and down game, but...
Up and down in terms of... impact, very Eric Karlsson-esque, if you will.
Yeah, actually, in a weird way. And I mean, that was a really great, I want to highlight it, really great read he made on the Zetterlund goal yesterday against Vancouver. William Eklund falls down, and Ferraro just, I'm going to go. And Ferraro also has trust that Eklund knows when he gets up that he's got to help cover or somebody's going to cover for him. Yeah. And so it makes a great decision because if Ferraro plays too cautious there, then there's nobody gets the puck, and that chance just dies when Eklund falls in the defensive zone.
Yeah, I can hear the comments and the headlines now. Keegan thinks Mario Ferraro is Erik Karlsson. It's going to be great. let's see, Duclair was healthy scratched at some point this week, or last week?
No, it was last week, yeah.
Yeah, and then he came back and had a goal 2 games ago, an assist yesterday's game. So maybe a little bit of a bounce back from Duclair.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, for sure. He's bounced back pretty well. He's done a good job of one of the things that Quinn was critical about and why he got scratched was that Duclair, he felt, wasn't skating enough in all three zones, you know, which obviously is usually a suggestion that a guy's not skating that hard defensively or in the neutral zone. Usually people skate hard offense, but actually, Duclair wasn't skating hard on the offensive zone too. That's why he was offside on that Granlund goal against Arizona last week.
So
we have definitely seen more of that, more 200 foot of skating. We've seen the production kind of follow. Granlund's still playing at a pretty high level, and that's helped. And Duclair has, I think, what, a goal and an assist. So last couple games here,
we have a. I'm not going to call it a good top six. We have a top six that's able to score goals, which makes me happy.
Right?
Yeah, you know, it's not like the dark ages of the first 3 weeks of the seasons where you could, like, pray that you're going to get one goal a game. It's like, now we're actually getting in some consistent 2-3-4 goal efforts, which is good. There have been, like, little stretches last week where they were bad again. But, you know, so there's at least flashes, I think. And
yeah,
Eklund,
it's
as always. Eklund's still great as always. We have the Jacob McDonald hype train still going on.
Jacob McDonald has as many goals as Erik Karlsson.
Bam. See?
Six.
And before Timo Meier, I think, had 2 goals in the last game. Zetterlund had more goals than Timo, so.
Yeah, well, Zetterlund scored yesterday, so I'm not sure where that tracker is. Yeah, I should do a graphic with Timo's head and Fabian's head and Eric's head and Jacob's head. So,
yeah, you're gonna get a ton of hate for all of that, but it's gonna be good.
Fabian is still ahead. Timo's at 8 goals right now, so Fabian's got 9, right? So one of the funny things about McDonald is, of course, he did score some of these goals as a forward too, so it does definitely skew the stats a little bit. But when you look at NHL.com and you filter out defensemen and look at the goals, right, and guys who have 6 or more goals right now, I think the leader is who's got maybe 10, right? Is that Hughes probably with 10 or somebody? I don't know who leads right now, but somebody's got 10. But a funny thing is, like, when you look at the guys with 6 goals or above, and you look at just their minutes, right? Everybody's in the 20-minute mark except for this one guy, Jacob McDonald, who also impressively has done 6 goals in 17 games. It's actually pretty crazy. Yeah, not that I expect him to keep it up, but, like, that's actually, it's Quinn Hughes with 10. But all the guys who are 6 or above, you just look at their minutes, they're all in the 20s. The exceptions are guys like Thomas Harley has 9 goals. He plays 18 minutes a night. But then you get to number 13 on the NHL.com list, and Jacob McDonald, 11:54 a night.
11 minutes. Oh my gosh. That's like, yeah, that's below most third liners in general.
And everybody's in the high 20s or 30s mm-hmm. In games played, except for Jacob McDonald, who has 6 goals in 17 games. So.
You know what? Do what you do well. Although I guess he's still telling me that was at forward. So I don't know how much it
counts.
Well,
it's weird because, yeah, like yesterday's goal against Vancouver, he actually switched up on defense. If you watch that, he was a defenseman on that play. It was Ruda and McDonald back there. And so that's one of the fun things about what he's doing, that literally you don't know what position he's playing. on any given shift. You really need to watch it to know. And yeah. So I would say, like, his 6 goals, some of them have been on the power play too, where he does play basically power play is so somewhat positionless, but he does play quarterback, which is a defenseman's position. He plays back. And so let's see, actually, I can see really quickly. He has 3 power play goals. And so that one yesterday he scored 2 was 5-on-5. So I think at least four of these 6 goals, he was, I would consider him playing defense.
Love it. He's the Erik Karlsson we needed all along.
Well, Erik Karlsson at what? 14 times less money. So
that's true. Yeah.
And I can't argue with the value there. So
4 less years on the contract, too.
Yeah.
All right. Any updates on the Couture and Sturm injuries?
Yeah, Couture just continues to seem like he's working, he's progressing. He joined morning skate for the first time. Then he followed that by joining practice for the first time. David Quinn said that the next step, though, is for him to be like a full participant in practice. Like, he has been there for practice, and he's been part of drills, but he hasn't done everything. He hasn't done all the contact stuff, so they're kind of withholding him from some of that stuff, right? So he does that. That's kind of the next big step. For mm-hmm. Logan. He didn't travel to Vancouver. I actually thought he might, not that he would play in Vancouver, but just to be part of the kind of the camaraderie, all that kind of stuff, right? The team road trip, which he hasn't done too much this year. But anyway, though, so he did not take part in that. And so we'll have to wait till after the holidays and see if he's a full participant in practice. Actually, I wonder mm-hmm. if he's going to be in LA. The Sharks' first game after the holiday break is in LA on the 27th. So I wonder if we'll see Logan there. I don't know if he's close. There's no timeline on him yet. So I would caution in terms of saying that he's going to be back by X date or very soon, but he's progressing. And I think that's the important thing. He's trending kind of upward.
He gets a couple holiday cookies and holiday cheer in him, and then he'll be back and good to go. It's good that he's spending time with his family and everything too. And
yeah, if I were to guess, though, I don't think we see him until January. I do think he's progressing, okay, and we will see him soon. But I would guess, but that's just a guess, of course. Sturm, we don't have a timeline on him, but he talked with the Mercury News, and he revealed that he's actually been dealing with this issue. Mm-hmm. It was something in the right hand or wrist, which is exactly what we speculated, just based on what we had seen and heard and all that stuff, right? And anyway, so it is a right hand or wrist issue. He had a procedure done there. Apparently, it's something that he's been dealing with for a year or so, but just sort of the pain, the inflammation, he said, was just too great this time around. And so they just wanted to deal with it. And so there's no timeline for exactly when he will be done. It's not a finger precisely. Like Barabanov, there was a sense of when he'll be back, and he came back within the timeline that was given. So there's no timeline for Sturm. It'd be interesting to see if we will ever get to see the Sharks sort of 4 centermen that they mm-hmm. hope to start the season with. In Couture, Hurdle, Granlund, and Sturm, because as we've seen with what Granlund and Hurdle have done this year, having a good centerman really does, it does make the wingers better. And so it's unfortunate that, again, not that this would be a playoff team or whatever, but that never got to kind of see that, because I think we would have seen a better Sharks team if especially their centermen had been healthy.
But we would be so far not in last place in the tankathon standings. Probably.
Not so and far. Like I said, I don't think it makes that much of a difference, but there'd be a couple periods, a couple games there where you would see the difference. Yeah. So
we're getting close. Chicago is coming for it. Anaheim's coming for it. Columbus.
Yeah.
Teams are really gunning for this, you know?
Yeah, but it'd be like four more points. The Sharks might have two more wins.
Probably.
So they'd be very much in the race for the best lottery odds.
Yeah. As we are all going to watch the Macleod Celebrini this week at the World Juniors, just keep in mind, again, you'll feel better and happier in your life if you just accept the fact that Chicago is going to win the lottery and that's what's going to happen.
I don't accept things like that. I think things are so like,
it's already predetermined. Not because the NHL's rigging it.
To send players it's not because they're rigging it. In Pittsburgh. That's why I don't get it. Yeah. So yeah,
it's not because they're rigging it. It's just because the world is unfair. There's no okay. It's just the life is meaningless. World is unfair.
Well, yeah. Then what will happen is that the Penguins drop out of the playoffs.
Ooh.
They're in the top 10. They win the lottery. The Sharks don't get the pick because that pick's top 10 protected. And so they come in the next year with Sidney Crosby and angry Erik Karlsson and Macklin Celebrini. So
yeah, they have like amazing center depths. Yeah, that's the one. You're right. Chang, you've just created a new nightmare scenario for us. Oh my God. Anyway, no, it'll be fine. Let's talk a little bit about the World Juniors. We are going to have a lot of, you're going to listen to a lot of discussion with Stephen Ellis. So
yep.
We'll keep it a little bit brief in this part, but I'm super pumped. It's going to be a amazing tournament. We've heard from Chris Morehouse this week on just the progression of the Sharks prospects, the six prospects that are there, and that's Will Smith, Erik Folkamp, Jake Furlong, Philip Bistet, Matthias Havelid, and Kasper Haltinen. What surprised you about that interview, if anything, Shang, that with Chris? I don't know if surprised.
I wouldn't say anything surprised me. Yeah, I mean, you were bang on sort of why Furlong and Polkamp are there, and Morehouse basically said some of the same things. You know, Polkamp's got a great shot, so there's some power play value, but he's also is a scrappy defender. Furlong is sort of that fit guy that can fit with a more offensive guy, or he can be the puck mover if you put him with a shutdown guy. You know, he's just sort of a jack of all trades defenseman for this a Team Canada team. Haltinen obviously is got that shot that can murder you. Yeah, there are things that other parts of his game that he's working on that they seem happy with his progress in London. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything so much surprising. I think it's just interesting to always hear from what the Sharks, you know, Morehouse's Sharks director of amateur scouting, and so to kind of hear his perspective and how he's seeing things. So one thing I think I will say that was, I guess, maybe a little different is that he did really make a note of sort of Will Smith's drive and Will Smith sort of maybe not leadership is the exact word, but just sort of that drive to succeed and be the best.
Passion,
and that's something that that's something that they felt was really clear when they interviewed him. And so that's the kind of thing that, like, when you talk about Will Smith, right, a lot of the discussion is about his on the ice skill, also his on the ice sort of flaws, right? Like being a smaller guy, maybe not being the best defensively at all times, right? So it's always centered around his on the ice, right? And so there's not a lot of chatter about just sort of his off the ice. And that sounds like a big reason why the Sharks drafted him, that, you know, they believe that he's a guy that, whatever he's at now, he's driven to succeed. And so that means that he will work on the things that he's not so strong at, and he'll continue to excel at the things that he already is good at. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that mention or thinking that when we interviewed him at the draft, actually, just that he does have a little bit of, I guess, competitive fire. He seems very intense when he answers questions about competitiveness and the game itself. So I do remember thinking that when I was talking with him.
Yeah, I wonder, like, I think I'll ask him something like this one day, giving something away, but, like, I wonder if he has sort of a chip on his shoulder being, like, being the rich kid, you know, which he is, to be honest, right? But sometimes that gives you a chip on his shoulder that people doubt you because of this or that, or they think maybe you're less hungry. I don't know.
And he's probably been the best part of his age group for Team USA for, like, many years, because even before he had that breakout USHL season or USNTDP season, he was still like one of the better players the year before that, and he's been kind of in these international tournaments discussions. So you're right, maybe he's just got a little bit of a I'm the rich kid, I've been good for many years kind of chip on his shoulder kind of thing.
But like I think maybe he's been doubted in some ways because maybe like I don't know.
People... I don't actually know how. Like I want to make that clear. Unless you do. Have any idea how actual like wealthy his family is?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about the amount of dollars, but like if you're the grandson of Charles Comiskey, owner of the White Sox, I mean, and there are buildings, So that's sort of a leap on my part. I'll admit, but I do think though that there are sort of doubts and aspersions cast on him again. Size also, right? And stuff like that, and also two-way game questions, right? And so, yeah, so I wonder how he will respond on a big stage like this one, just like he responded at the U18s, of course, right? So,
his first two games that I've seen of him, and this is all pre-tournament stuff, but they're actually pretty competitive games. Like they, all the teams that are playing are, you know. Full teams. They're trying to really see who's going to be their leaders and such. He was excellent. Like he was really good. He his first game he had two goals. He looked sluggish in the first period, but then like came on constantly, just stealing pucks, rushing the other way, creating chances. So I think there is some element of his two-way game that is built around. Like quick hitting offense, like stealing the puck and going the other way with it, which can lead or can lead to him looking a little bit like high up in the zone, kind of floating a little bit because he's just kind of waiting for the defender to make a mistake to try and go the other way with it. That is a little, I'll call it like junior-esque, but maybe a little junior-esque. You know, it's like that kind of play. Defenders aren't going to make mistakes at the blue line like they do at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. So. But right now it's, you know, it's kind of how he drives a lot of his offense. And there is value in that defensively and offensively, obviously.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. If you could turn a guy over high in the zone, I mean, that's counterattack city right there. So
but that's kind of like his MO right now, at least is that kind of play at evens. And then obviously just creative skill. He's entering the zone very well. I think he does better at bigger ice, which is kind of, you know, I think Steven Ellis also mentioned this, is that his game like does really well when he has a lot of room. So he's going to need to work on getting and forcing that room at the NHL level, but it's exciting to see. His second game, I think he had one assist, but it was a beauty of an assist. He looked good. It just wasn't as like dominant as the first game that I watched him play.
Sure.
But he's still going to be in the top six and likely in the top six and one of the driving forces because their line is just so good. It's like, I really wish the Sharks would somehow draft all three dudes and then they could just create that line. This is Emily, my cat, in case anybody was watching on video. he looks great. Polkamp, his second game looked really good. He was aggressive. He had one shift specifically in the offensive zone where he looked like an animal. Like he was just all over the ice. And they hemmed in Team Canada for like a minute and a half. And he was a huge part of that. He was unleashing his point shot, looking for passes. It looked really good. So I think he's going to have a little bit more value on the team than people kind of give him credit for. I think he will find himself on the power play at some point.
Yeah.
All right, Emmy, you got to go, baby.
But, yeah, to finish up about the Morehouse interview, too, Morehouse also talked about prospects who aren't at the World Juniors, like Quentin Musty, Cagnoni, Cam Lunn. But also, too, a little bit of update on less kind of a more under-the-radar Sharks prospects who are having pretty good seasons or have done pretty good things this season. David Klee. Brandon Svoboda, Theo Jacobson, or Jacobson, I think it's Jacobson, and Axel Landon. And so, yeah, check out that interview.
Yeah, he ruined my, I was going to surprise everybody with like a little bit of Theo Jacobson talk later on in the spring, because I watched a Allsvenskan game, and I came away super impressed. And I think actually during the Schummers, like the prospect camp, actually he had one or a couple good plays, and I remember noting that he looked good, better than I thought he had in the past. So it's good. He's had a huge offensive explosion at the Allsvenskan. He's got like 20-something points in 20-something games. So interesting to see, because he's kind of not a forgotten draft pick, but a couple years ago, and didn't really do too much for a few seasons there.
Yeah, so. Sixth round pick of the 2021 draft. Yeah, so.
Yeah. But it's interesting that Morales mentioned him. I'm excited to see if they try and get him to come over to North America soon.
Yeah. Or maybe give him a year in the
SHL or
the regular. Yeah, yeah. And then see if he can kind of that production translates over there. So.
Yeah, but he looks good. Who else? Havilland had kind of a up and down game against Team USA. He had a few things where he was out of position. But the first game I watched of Havilland, he looked great. He, again, huge point shot, good puck mover. Kind of similar to Polkamp, to be honest, but I think a little less aggressive in the way that he defends and everything. Him and Bistad's looked excellent as well. He's had a goal. I think he had an assist the first game, goal in the second game that I watched. And
it looks like you're wearing a scarf there.
Yeah, Emily, she likes to she walks on her shoulders. So around the house, she'll just demand to be picked up and put on her shoulders and walks around with us. So this is where she sits. Bistad's looked excellent. He does need to pick up the physicality a little bit, I think. He's a huge guy on the ice, like tall, still kind of lanky looking, but he could really, if he tried or kind of turned it up a little bit, he could really hit some folks and steal some pucks, but he kind of lets up a little bit. And I feel like his physicality needs to ramp up to be able to really use his frame effectively. Like, he's good at shielding pucks and all that, but he just needs to hit folks. Like, I don't want to say it like too bluntly, but he just needs to hit some people. Like, he could definitely do it. He's got a great like feel of knowing where the puck's going to be. So he's always in close contact with the defenders or attackers, but he just doesn't hit folks. He just needs to hit somebody. That's my current analysis. And then Halton and I've only watched the one game of, which I thought he looked excellent. He had to get two assists in that game, both of which were really good cross ice passes, and he was very aggressive. So super pumped for all the Sharks prospects coming out. So, and we'll have some analysis. I'm going to actually hopefully put out some articles on San Jose Hockey Now about some of the games. So, because I've been doing little Twitter threads, basically, if you've been checking out my Twitter on some of my thoughts, but I think it's time for some more formal analysis.
Yeah, well, we'll check with the editor.
Yeah, gotta clear it with the editor. All right, Shang. Let's go with our final Sharks Christmas wish list before the interview, and then we can get on out of here. Do you have a specific, what do you want for Christmas from the Sharks for the upcoming year?
Yep. I think the two things in particular is I think the obvious thing is that I am hoping that young players continue to emerge, just because as somebody who has watched this rebuild, half start, not really start for a couple of years there, and just I really like watching good hockey. I don't know how I've said it so many times, and I can't stress it enough. My work is better. I think the best work I've done as a writer was during the 2019 playoffs when I was still writing for Fear to Finn, and went to every Sharks playoff game, even the road ones, and paid my way for those, by the way. That wasn't SB Nation, but I just wanted to give the best coverage, and it was really important. And I was trying to make my name. But sure. I think the best work I did was still probably in that year, in that playoff year. So I like Will Smith. I raised my level when the stakes are higher. And I've been waiting for years for the Sharks to be interesting again, so people care about breakdowns, like tape breakdowns, or they care about the sport logic stats that I pay a healthy sum amount for every year, but they're not that relevant because the team is terrible and people don't care about micro stats when you're being clocked, giving up 10 goals in back-to-back games and all that kind of stuff, right? People don't care about the micro stats because you suck. The counting stats say you suck. The the natural stat trick, the first wave of analytics, public analytics, say that you sucked, and the micro stats will say the same thing too, that you sucked. and so there's no interest in that. And so for me, and I, even for the health of the website too, it's good if there's hope. If people really think that, I think so at least, that it'll be good for business if the Sharks are better. And so to see guys like Willie Mecklin, obviously, really taking a step forward in the last month or so. I think right now this was kind of a question for Quinn in the first month of the season. And Quinn would say like, oh yeah, I thought he was better last year, which is not, of course, what you want to hear about a guy that is, finally playing in the NHL regularly after two off and on seasons. But I would say right now, if we were to ask Quinn, I will ask him. I think that's a good question. Good thing to get an update in. But I would say right now, Eklund looks definitively better than he did last season. There's definitely growth. And he may never be a superstar. Hint, hint for a future podcast episode. He is a legitimate building block. Whether or not he's going to be a franchise guy or just like a really, really good player to build around, both are still Sharks need all like any of that, whether they be a future franchise guy or just a legit building block, just a guy that you can count on for X amount of points a season and good two-way play, right? They just need winning players, right? William Eklund looks like he's going to be a winning player. Also, too, guys like Fabian Zetterlin, Philip Zadina, if they can keep coming along, showing just being more consistent, but they both have shown a great degree of promise, especially Zetterlin. Let's not forget, he started off on the fourth line, now he's playing with Granlund and Duclair. Speaking of more of those young guys too, obviously look to the defense too, and hopefully Thrun keeps progressing, Ahotia, guys like that, right? So we start to see more pieces of guys that we know, we think are going to be part of the next good Sharks team. And Eklund looks like a guy who's going to be there. That's great to see. Zetterlin might be, Zadina might be, Thrun might be, guys like that. So hopefully we see even more of that. So maybe a call up, in midseason, one of the Barracuda prospects shows another level to his game, be it a Bortolo or a Gushin or whoever, right? So anyway, more of that. So from some of the names mentioned, would be great. And then the second thing, which is I think a little more less obvious, is that I've taken a lot of pleasure this year watching guys like Hurdle and Granlund, those two guys especially, really, I guess, find their games, after down years for both of them last year. And it is really great to see guys who want it as much as they do, who are being doubted for this and that reason, right? Come back and be the guys that they're supposed to be. And like we mentioned too early in the podcast, they've made their wingers so much better. I don't think Eklund takes the leap that he's taken if he's not stapled with Hurdle. I don't think that Zetterlin or even Duclair's recent sort of resurgence, right? None of that, or that's not as likely to happen for sure if Granlund's not popping in a point per game and making plays all over the ice, right? And so I've really enjoyed watching those two guys in particular just keep playing at an outstanding level, the level that that the Sharks believe that they could get back to, that you and I thought that they could get back to too. And so it's nice to see that even if the team is losing, that there's some good hockey, you know, being played out there by a couple of the guys at least.
At least, yeah, like some of it's rising to the
top.
So I hope
to keep seeing that in particular from those guys and Couture when he comes back.
Love it. All right, I'm gonna put on the ridiculous hat because it looks ridiculous while I have headphones.
Hey, what happened to your scarf?
Oh, I need a. Yeah, my scarf has walked off. My neck is very cold, and scarf has legs. All right, there we go. I have two Christmas presents I want for the Sharks in the new year. First one is I want an exciting trade deadline, and for the Sharks specifically, it could be, you know, I don't really care if, you know, Detroit gets somebody crazy, whatever. But I want something unexpected. I don't just want to walk into the trade deadline going, oh, great, we got a third and a fifth round pick for some expiring UFAs.
Yeah, sure,
and that was it. Sure. I want something. I don't want a specific guy to be gone, but I want something unexpected either returning, as in like maybe a young player, somebody that the Sharks are targeting that they're bringing in to try and see if they can get some value out of. Kind of like how they've done with, you know, ever since Greer's come in, actually, just finding a guy that's maybe...
It's for a pick for Alexis Lafreniere. No, just...
Yes, there we go. That's the one. No, it's something unexpected. Or I want like a first round pick or some sort of prospect return for a guy that we're trading that I'm just super excited about. So that's one present. The second one kind of similar to yours, where I want the Barracuda call-ups to happen. And that'll probably be after the trade deadline, obviously, for specific guys. Obviously I still love Gushin and Bordalo. I think they had, you know, a call up already. So I'm not going to say that I would need them to be called up to be happy.
Right.
But I think guys like, and this seems a little bit rushed, but Shakir Mugamadulin has played very well for the Barracuda this year and they don't want to rush his development. I get that. I just want
getting better too, right?
Yes. He's come on even more.
That's, I think, the most important thing.
Exactly. He's improving as he's adjusting to North America. And he, I think he just needs a couple games. I want to see what he's at the NHL level and see if what we've seen in the preseason and then in the AHL is actually going to be translatable at all. And I want a call up for two more guys, being greedy. Leon Gavanka, just because he's leading the Barracuda in points by D-man. And he hasn't played an NHL game and he's 25. I just want an NHL game. Sure. Just one for Leon Gavanka. He's looked pretty good as well. He looked great last year in the AHL. I think there's probably a translatability issue that coaches keep seeing when he gets to there, but I just want one game for him.
Sure.
And then finally, an unexpected one. I want a call up for Ethan Cardwell because I think he also kind of deserves it. He's improved throughout the season. He's getting, you know, it seems like points in every single game. Mm-hmm. He's not a defensive liability. He's, you know, he's only 5'11", so he's not a huge guy, but he checks well. He forechecks super great. So I think he could get a call up late in the season. So that's what I want for Christmas is some late season call ups.
Okay.
And maybe Gushin too, because why not?
Yeah. let me ask you for your trade deadline. I guess drama. Here's just one I thought of. This is just me messing around.
Sure.
So Alexis Lafreniere started off the season pretty well. Obviously he has went into a little bit of a slump. I think he went 13 games without a goal. Would you trade the New Jersey conditional pick, which can be a first rounder if New Jersey makes the Eastern Conference Finals, for Lafreniere?
Yes.
How about Pittsburgh's top 10 protected first round pick? Oh.
If it's like 11, probably not.
Well, we don't know. That's if you trade the trade deadline, you're just sort of rolling the dice, right? So you're rolling the dice that New Jersey pick can end up anywhere from like what 25 to 55 or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Pittsburgh pick though is anywhere from 11 to 30, well, I guess if they win a Stanley Cup, 32, right? So
probably not.
Okay.
Just because of where Pittsburgh is in the standings, I think it's more likely it's top 15 pick. Unless, you're kind of just hoping at that point if you trade it away. And I think the Sharks need a defenseman in their pipeline, and that kind of that pick is right in the range for a ton of defensemen they could get. Mm-hmm. Whereas the New Jersey pick, I think, you know, Lafreniere is going to probably be similar to what they're going to get in that range anyway. And, you know, maybe even a little bit better, probably a little bit better than what they likely are to get in that range. So
yeah,
I think
yeah.
the Pittsburgh pick is just a little bit too valuable in this draft, given how many defensemen are right around that area. So, but, you know, yeah, Lafreniere is still young, so he could turn around. But the Sharks do have a lot of winger projects. Do have a lot of winger projects. So it's not like that's specifically their need either. So, yes, that would be a spicy trade deadline. I'd love it. I'd get my Christmas wish. All right. Do you have anything else to say before we go on to the Stephen Ellis World Junior Championship interview?
Just thank you to everybody who has listened over the last year. Oh, I wanted to announce some exciting news too, that we're bringing on one of my writers that, you know, Josh Fragellin, but we're also bringing him along to help on the podcast a little bit. And so you'll start seeing a little more, you know, he was able to help us get some video clips up, that sort of thing. Right. Not that we can't do that, just that the time it's tough for us. And so Josh is going to help with a little bit of that stuff. You know, maybe we'll have him on sometime. You know, we need a guy in the studio that we can make fun of, a young guy. Right. That's sort of
that's
a radio dynamic. Like, podcast radio dynamic. So
that'll be awesome.
But anyway, happy holidays to everybody, and thank you so much for your support over the year, and we'll see you in the new year.
All right. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever you guys say. We will see you soon. Bye. Today, we're welcoming Stephen Ellis to the show from Daily Faceoff. Stephen's going to be talking all about the World Junior Championships this year and how that pertains to the Sharks prospects. So welcome, Stephen, to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Great. So we should just jump right into it because we have a few Sharks prospects to talk about, which is good news for a team that is trying to build up their prospect pool. Just some general thoughts about the tournament before we get into the Sharks.
Yeah, it's kind of like you look at how the season started this year, and I think a lot of people kind of turned the focus to the World Juniors and things like that. And to have, I believe, six prospects for the Sharks represented, that's a big deal. That's a good thing. That's a good sign of the future. And, you know, whether these guys all make it, whether they're trade candidates, whatever, I don't think it really matters. I think the good thing is, you know, we've got players in Canada, USA, Sweden, and Finland. So every day you're going to have at least one guy to watch. I think that's going to be exciting for Sharks fans. Other than the fact that, again, if you live close to San Jose, maybe those 3 a.m. start times might not be super ideal for some of those games, but
not great.
If you're able to stay to wake up for those, it's going to be worth it, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit rough, just a touch. Let's start with Team USA, just because that was kind of given that Will Smith made the team, and that's the Sharks, you know, prize prospect as of now. Let's start with Will Smith. He had the like gold medal winning goal at the U18s last year. He has been kind of doing well in his first foray into college hockey. He's above a point a game. He's part of that like dominant freshman line. But how do you think his game is going to adjust to this U20 tournament after his U18 play?
I think this is going to be, you know, a walk in the park for him. We saw him with the U18s and that chemistry he obviously had all year long with Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault, and that combination has continued into college, which is really exciting to see. And a lot of Boston-based guys in this this tournament for the United States. But with Smith, it's just he could play anywhere in this lineup. He could be, you know, the first line center. He could be the second line center. My guess is his line will be the second line. And that's one hell of a second line when you're looking at one of the most dominant trios in college hockey. So every time the United States seem to play and Will Smith's there, he starts to shine. We saw that at the U18s, the best hockey I've ever seen him play. Just the chemistry he had with those line mates were great, but he was the one driving those plays. And, you know, talking to some scouts, some think that he'd be, you know, the second best prospect in this year's draft. And it was a pretty stacked top end last year, but when it comes to Smith, the way he plays the game, I know he knows how to use that extra ice to his advantage. Mm-hmm. We've seen that already in his international career. And he's the good thing about the Americans is they do have a lot of experience playing on the bigger ice if you play on the development team, because usually that means you've played about 2 to 3 tournaments already with that extra ice. And so I don't think it'll take him long to adjust to that. he's going to be one of the best players in this tournament, no question about it.
Guys, if you guys don't know, Steven is the prospects analyst for Daily Faceoff. His work is incredible, so make sure to go check it out. He touches on a lot of prospects. I follow his work. It's his reach is very wide encompassing. Mm-hmm. But my question to Steven about Will is what do you see his ceiling as? I think there's some questions about how he's adjusted to college hockey, maybe some periods, some games where he hasn't been quite as dominant. So just what are you seeing for him so far in the NCAA?
I think the biggest concern with me back when he was in junior still applies here, where he will have these off games. And a good example was the top prospect showcase they had in Plymouth last year. And they kept that same line together, and we saw them so dominant. But when it came to how Smith played the first half, he was dead quiet, didn't do anything, kind of started to float around. Mm-hmm. And it was like he heard everyone in the crowd saying, "What's going on? What's happening here?" Because then he ends up winning like the MVP of the game because he played outstanding in that second half. So for me, it's, you know, getting that game-to-game consistency could be tough. I think the issue with him is with anybody on that U18 team last year, they just floated to wins. I think they only had like a handful of losses all year long. So there weren't a lot of games where the Americans really had to get a lot more outside of just, you know, offense out of that top line. And you can see Smith maybe not always attacking like he should and things like that. But when he's on his game, it's a guy with first line potential in the NHL.
Yeah, and that's kind of what people have seen in college too, is that occasionally his game won't be, he'll look kind of like disengaged, or his like compete isn't as high. And I guess that comes back to not having to come from behind a lot as he was a junior. So, yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see when he's in this kind of tournament where it's a little bit, you know, closer in terms of skill level between all the teams, how he's going to play. But
it's actually a higher level, right? Because if Steven is right, he's on the second line. That's actually kind of a rare thing for him, right? Because he's usually normally a first line guy.
Yeah, and like he'll be playing on the power play. He'll get all those opportunities. Yeah. It's like the only reason why he's not the top line is they want to keep those guys together, and you're competing mm-hmm. against like Cutter Gauthier, who is like an unbelievable beast in his own end. So I'd say second line, probably one of the best second line centers you can get in this tournament.
All right, I got to bring this dredges back up. Smith or Michkov?
Oh, I'm Michkov all the way.
Okay. All
the time. and nothing to do with Smith. I just think Michkov's the real deal. And yep. I can't believe, you know, obviously he wasn't going number one. Number two, I think Fantilli should have gone. You know, Michkov shouldn't have gone past number three.
Okay, sorry guys for bringing this back up, those bad memories from June, but just had to get Steven on the record for that.
You know, so San Jose's not the only fan base that wishes they got Michkov, but
we'll be hearing about this for a decade.
The next
or more.
Half decade.
Especially when you look at, you know, some of the center depth options that the Sharks are going to have down the line. It's like, well, okay, it would have been nice to have a guy who can also play pretty good wing hockey, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, at least it wasn't like, you know, Reinbacher over Michkov or anything like that.
Right.
Griffin Reinhardt.
I do love Reinbacher. I love him. It's just, but
that's not who Montreal should have picked.
Absolutely. Let's talk about another guy from the Sharks here on Team USA, Eric Polkamp. And I watched Eric Polkamp during the summer showcase, and he kind of stood out like in a good way. And a lot of people kind of started to say, is this guy going to make the team, given there's a little bit of lack of defensive depth for the Team USA? Where do you think he slots in this defensive group?
I think he's going to be, you know, third pairing at best. But the thing about him was, watching that World Junior Summer Showcase, I thought he was one of the best players they had there. And granted, you know, they split the two teams up, so a bit more opportunity for a guy like him to show up. And like Lane Hudson didn't play every game. But you just look at his record with USA Hockey. Last year at the World Junior A Challenge was one of the best players in that tournament. He scored over a goal per game when USA won gold. You know, his college team doesn't get a lot of high-end prospects out there, and for him to play as well as he's been doing this year, and then obviously what he was able to do with Cedar Rapids last year, this is a guy that's playing with confidence in the last, you know, 18 months of his career. I think that this is someone that's going to turn a lot of heads. So someone who was not definitely very far from being a lock on this team, had to fight his way through. Not a tall and stature guy, but he does play a bit of physical game, likes to put some power into his shot and things like that. So I think that he's a guy that if you could throw him on the power play in a pinch, if you need to, there's a lot of guys you could do on the US team here, but I think his flexibility in both of his zones there is very important. So I'd say I think the defensive depth this year in the American roster was a bit better than some might give it credit for heading into camp. So he had to really fight his way through, but just based off of how he played in that in the summer showcase, I think that put him much higher than some other guys there.
Yeah, well, for... he goes to Bemidji State. So quick pop quiz, Stephen. Is Bemidji State the best college name out there?
Bemidji. See, I'm glad you said it out loud because I didn't want to have to pronounce Bemidji State.
I'm pretty sure it's Bemidji State. I could be wrong. If it's not, they should change it to that because it sounds way cooler. So.
I'll point out he's the only NHL prospect on that team, and you could tell some nights that he's out there performing better than a lot of those guys that got.
I guess for fans who are unfamiliar with this game, what does he bring specifically? I think people have talked about his shot a lot. Do you think that's kind of like what he brings is a good point shot and some compete?
There's a lot of power behind his the way he shoots, the way he hits. He's on the power play, watching him, he's really patient with the puck. He knows when to shoot it, not just trying to move the puck for the sake of moving it. So it's smart decision making there too. And I think, he's also a decent skater. So there's that. So I think if you had to put like one phrase to describe him, it's high impact, just like from a velocity standpoint, like hits, shots. They're not weak.
I like it. It sounds like a perfect college hockey player.
Do you think some of those skills translate to NHL or too early to say?
I still say a little too early to say, going out there and putting up as good of a season in the USHL is one thing. And then, college, he's not playing against the strongest competition every night. But I think this is an opportunity to really show what type of value he is. I don't think he's more than a third pair defenseman in the NHL, but if you get that out of a fifth round pick, I'd say that's pretty good.
Round overager for sure.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's a Bemidji State Beavers, so that just makes it
even good name. Yeah. That's a good name.
I love it.
Brad Hunt, alum, famous alum.
we'll mention one more prospect for Team USA, Quentin Musty. Are you familiar with Quentin Musty at all?
I've probably seen him in the in live maybe 20 to 30 times. I'd say yes.
So maybe a little. So you've seen him a lot, and he's having a phenomenal year in the OHL.
When he's not slew footing people,
he's almost above 2 points a game, or he might actually be above 2 points a game now. Why do you think he was left off this roster? It's been kind of a sticking point for the Sharks fans.
Yeah, and it's not even a slight against him. I think you just look at the team, and one of the best junior hockey goal scorers right now in the world is Cole Iserman, and he wasn't even invited to camp either. So this is a group that had a lot of offensive options. I don't think he was going to play in the top six, the third line, a lot of speed, some guys that could maybe be a little quicker, do a bit more. Where Musty, I think, if he was there, it's for, the offensive production he's able to bring. I just think it was just kind of a thing of just too many options to choose from. This is a group that has as much scoring depth as we've seen for the United States. It's too bad. I would have liked to see him at this event, but I don't think, unless you're putting him as the 13th forward, and that might be Oliver Moore, and his whole thing is the hardest, fastest working guy you've ever seen. I just don't think he would have been able to outbeat him there. So obviously, there's a bit of bias towards the major junior guys. I think we can't deny that when Hunter Buštević is the Canucks prospect, is one of the highest scoring, defensemen in the CHL, and he wasn't invited to camp either. But I will point out, do you guys know much about the third goalie for the Americans, Sam Hildebrandt?
Isn't that I remember reading a headline that it was an interesting story about him, but I don't know specifically.
So I wrote a story this week about how he was.
It's probably your headline.
He was playing junior C last year. Was an emergency backup for the Barry Colts for a little bit, and now he's the third goalie for USA at the World Juniors. Wow. So he's one of the few CHL guys, not someone I would have expected to be there. But when it comes to Musty, it's just like, at the same time, for as good as he's playing, he's also playing with some pretty damn good line mates. True. So it's not like he's dominating it all on his own and you can't keep him off there. That's not a slight against him. It helps that he's playing with two outstanding junior hockey players too. But it was just kind of a numbers game really, from what I was told.
What's up with the slew footing thing? Finding a replay of that, it's like finding like Zapruder, like you can't find it out there. So I still haven't seen what he did, but
yeah, that was, I haven't seen the footage either.
Oh, so even you haven't seen it.
But clearly it was enough to give him the suspension. And then he comes back. Twice. And then he get like a 5-point game in his first game back or something.
He did. Yeah. But then he got suspended again. for the same thing.
Is Quentin Musty the Draymond Green of the OHL? Discuss.
Put it this way. He's going to be in the top six next year. I'm confident.
Yeah. Because this team kind of is going to turn over a ton, right? Like, there's a lot of guys that are going to lose eligibility after this year or be in the NHL.
Majority, guys like that. Yeah, he'll be like, he'll probably be what that second line is now with Will Smith. You know, Will Smith, I'm banking on him going to the NHL next year. But you're going to throw in James Haggins there. You're going to get Cole Eiserman. You're going to get Musty. Like, it's still going to be a stupidly dangerous team.
Well, I got to, a record scratch. Will Smith going to NHL next year. What are your expectations of him, of just sort of how he translates the first year?
I guess we'll see. That was my prediction last year, and I want to stick to it. But okay. It's just, I think he, again, when he takes over, he takes over. And he thinks the game at a very high pace. He plays the game at a high pace. There's a lot of NHL caliber talent there in terms of the way he thinks the game, shoots the puck. Deke's passed guys like, you know, Deke had passed some USHL defensemen last year. Is not the same as Deking out Cale Makar, but it's still something where I think he's going to be a solid enough two-way player, a solid enough skilled forward that he's going to have no problem stepping into the NHL when he gets a chance. We'll just see kind of, I guess, you know, obviously San Jose's not expecting big things like next year, so maybe they don't need to rush him. Hell, maybe they get Celebrini and then you really don't need them. But I wouldn't be, if Smith signs and he plays in the NHL next year, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I wonder if it's kind of like in Greer's focus, because I know that they're very, very patient with the prospects so far.
It's got to be better than Columbus, which they don't seem to know what they're doing with the young guys.
Yeah, up, down, scratch, like all sorts of things. David Juracek and Kent Johnson. Like, it does seem like they just, throwing stuff at the wall. And Cole Sillinger, man, you're right, it's just they doesn't seem like there's any kind of rhyme or reason with their team. But so we'll have to see about Will Smith, because like there is, I think, in my opinion, some stuff that he could do in college to be better for the NHL. But you're right, the offensive impact he could have even at the NHL levels is probably enough to keep him, so we'll have to see. Let's move on to Team Canada really quickly. And this one will be kind of a shorter segment. Sharks don't have as many prospects for Team Canada. But they do have one of the surprises of the tournaments in terms of who makes the roster is Jake Furlong out of Halifax in the QMJHL. Furlong making this team. What do you think?
I did not have him making this team. But the way he played in camp, he scored the two goals in that first game against Hugh Sports. Granted, one was an empty netter and the other was the biggest gift of a pass from future San Jose Shark, Macklin Celebrini. From beyond that, though, in the second game, I thought he was still a really strong defensive defender. He played really well in his own zone. It seemed like that first game gave him the confidence, like, oh, I could do this. I can make this team. And he played a much more rounded game in that second showing there. So good for him, getting a chance to talk to him after that first game. He's someone who said that he had to really prove a lot of people wrong to get to this point. I thought he, like some of the guys that he had to go beat out there, like Ty Nelson's one of the more dynamic offensive defensemen in the CHL and stole a spot away from him there. So I think that's a big deal. So him making this team was not a guy I thought was going to, but he took advantage of Ty Nelson having a quiet run and Michael Buchinger, the Blues prospect, having a terrible camp, and he took advantage of it and it showed. So good for him. A player that when he pinches in, he knows when to pinch in. He's smart about that, and that really paid off in that first goal he scored.
And what do you think his role is going to be on this team? I know it's always hard to kind of say that beforehand, but what do you think his role is going to be?
I think I got him penciled in potentially as the seventh defenseman on this team, just because they got some a bit more defensive guys that could play in a bit different roles. Getting Tristan Leno healthy. He's been sick for a few days. He'll be back in the lineup likely for the next exhibition game, and I think he'll be fine. Obviously, an Anaheim Ducks prospect there. So Canada's defense is quite rounded in terms of they got some size, they've got some speed, they've got some skill, they got some guys who know how to play defense in their own zone, because one of these things you will notice about a lot of quality defensemen these days is they don't play a lot of defense. And I think that's something that won't necessarily be an issue with this team. So I think they'll push him farther down. But, hey, you know what? He's there. And he's got a chance at gold and Canada's third potential gold in a row.
Yeah, I do love the Jake Furlong story. And I think I watched him in that second U Sports game. And I really did like his defensive impacts. And he seems like kind of a guy that's maybe his mid game is a little mature, as like a for a junior hockey player at least, and that's probably going back to what you're saying where a lot of guys don't play good defense. I think Furlong can play good defense, so maybe it's that's like, why they bought him.
Brant Clark in his early days in the OHL, like I don't know if sometimes if he ever like if he was allergic to his own goalie being near him because he would never play a lot of defense, but he put up a crap ton number of points, and we've seen kind of what that's allowed him to do this year in the AHL. But yeah, it's just it's funny how that happens where these defensemen don't play defense and they are just trying to shoot the puck at all times.
I haven't watched Denton Matejchuk this year much at all, actually, but he reminds me of that during his draft year. It was just like, go wild and out, going to be activating all the time, that kind of thing. I wonder if he still plays like that.
Well, you look at him this year, he had points in his first 23 games. And his only game in, that he's played this year outside of the NHL preseason, he had 3 points in 4 games with Columbus then, so he was still good then. The only game he hasn't got a point was the final game before he flew to camp. So, and he scored 2 goals against Denmark in the first exhibition game. So defensively, I have not seen him play any defense in person. I've only seen him score goals. So we'll
even while you're watching, he's not playing defense.
Yeah. It didn't help. He actually didn't participate in any of those 2 games in Oakville for training camp, but he, in that little scrimmage, he was trying to create chances on the rush.
Good for Jake. I'm actually super pumped about him making the team. But let's move on to Team Sweden and two guys that are very used to playing internationally, and Filip Bystedt and Mattias Hävelid. So Filip Bystedt was the Sharks' first-round pick in 2022, towards the latter end of the first round. He had an amazing U20 last year. He put up like 10 points in 7 games, but he's had a little bit of a down year this year in Sweden in terms of his offensive production. Why do you think he does well at international tournaments as compared to his Sweden tape this year?
Some guys just do, right? Like you look at him this year and not putting up a ton of points. He's actually on pace for fewer points despite playing more games projected this year with Linköping. And a lot of that is, you know, the team has a bit more scoring depth, kind of push him down a little bit, not always getting the same ice time. But I don't know. He's always kind of struck me as a hot and cold player. And like watching him with the World Junior or the World Junior Summer Showcase was one of the best players in that entire tournament. And it helped that, you know, the Swedes brought just the one team, so they got a good read on most of their guys. But he was consistently one of the standout guys in that tournament. It just, some guys just play better internationally. Dalibor Dvorsky, he's one of them. Otto Stenberg, another one that just, you know, looks like a pedestrian out there in the SHL at times, then he goes to international tournaments and he's challenging for the MVP award. It's a very difficult thing to get these guys to be playing against men at a young age. So even at 19, like, you're not seeing a lot of guys at that age playing a lot, doing a whole lot in the SHL. So when someone's putting up numbers like Jonathan Lekaramäki, the Canucks prospect, that's notable. So I'm not concerned yet. Yeah, and we're still talking about a young guy playing on a team that cares more about winning than developing their guys, which makes a lot more sense, given it is a pro hockey league. But it just seems like he shows up in these tournaments, and that's what they need from him again this year.
I think last year he was with, was he with Leo Carlson last year at the U20s? I think he was.
I believe so, yeah. And that's why he got the 10 points he did.
That's the other thing. It's like he seemed to play really well with Leo Carlson. He's going to have to kind of be on his own line. But it is a really well-rounded Swedish group, it feels like. Like, this forward depth for there seems a little bit understated, I think, and a lot of guys that have played together before.
Yeah, like, the thing with this team is they've been in the finals of the U18s back-to-back years. So you get the guys who were very close to each other 2 years ago and the guys that were close together last year are getting to combine and make this really well-rounded offensive group. Defensively, we can always count on the Swedes to be pretty good. I think for me, the big concern is their goaltending, where Hugo Hävelid, the brother of Mattias and the son of the coach, might be the starting goalie, but he's the smallest guy they have there and the only undrafted goalie prospect. But he tends to be given the nod because, you know, skill-wise, he's very good for this level. Probably not having an NHL career at 5'10", but I think just we know that he can come out and shine. We saw that at the World Junior Summer Showcase. We've seen that in the past. I still think it's a team that I don't particularly trust because it's very hard to trust the Swedes at this tournament ever when you look at the record over the last 20 years.
With Bystedt and Mattias Hävelid, what do you see with their NHL ceilings at this point with the seasons that they've had in Sweden?
It's a good question. You know, with Havlid, I think I love that he's a puck moving defenseman who I thought, you know, actually landed some good hits. I thought he was really good at that World Junior Summer Showcase. In terms of what his NHL, you know, potential is, I'm not sure at this point. I know for this team, he probably is going to be, if he's not top pair, he's second pair. He's going to be playing a lot of ice time, might even be one of the power play quarterbacks. So we'll see there. With Bystad, it's kind of like, I almost wonder if he'll fit better as a wing in the NHL, where he doesn't have all that responsibility. And a lot of what he does is just getting to the net and putting pucks in the net because he can do that. He's got that size. So we'll see. But I think both should be NHL players. I'm pretty confident in that. It's maybe not top pairing, top six guys, but depth guys who do a lot with the puck that you'll get excited about.
And Havlid didn't get to play last year in the U-20s. I think he was injured during that time, if I remember right. I just don't remember exactly what, but he didn't play. But 2 years ago, he was in the U-18s, and he put up like 12 points in six games, which is nuts for a defender.
I wish he was bigger. I think that's a given, that both he and his brother would be better if they were bigger. But watching them play at that U-18 level, it's like they're pretty damn good. And with Matias... I know a lot of eyes will be on Axel Sandin Pelikka, but I think Havlid could be one of the better defensemen in this tournament if he plays like we saw him at the World Junior Summer Showcase.
Love it. We have one more prospect to talk about.
He's my favorite.
One second after I plug in my headphones. Shank, do you want to take it over?
Sure. Kasper Halton and Team Finland. And I have many questions, but actually my first question, Steven, is to you. Why is he your favorite?
He's full of violence, whether it be how hard he hits, well, how hard he shoots. I got to see him for the first time in person at the U-18s. And I've never seen a guy land as a hit as hard as he did and then go out and take a shot that somehow didn't break the glass within seconds of each other. Loved watching him with London. I think he's just a pure talent. A lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun to talk to. I got to talk to him where he had a stare down with James Haggins after the U-18 game they had against each other, and Haggins one of the top prospects for 2025, and it was hilarious because they got into it a few times, and Haggins isn't known to get into like the muddy areas, but you know, Halton and dragged him in there and made him get involved that way, and that was a lot of fun. So I love guys that hit, score, get in the heads of opponents, and have a good smile about it afterwards.
Yeah, Kasper does have a lot of personality. I talked with him a bit during the rookie faceoff, I believe. And yeah, so definitely for sure on that end. So that is exciting. But my question with him, though, is watching him, though, that he is he shoots harder than everybody else. He hits harder than everybody else. He's bigger than everybody else. But does he do anything else? Like the other stuff, is he learning how to play the other parts of hockey in London?
It's tough because, again, they're a high-flying team where he doesn't necessarily need to do a whole lot of everything. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I did notice watching him play in that first exhibition game they played, it was against Slovakia yesterday. He was blocking shots. He was really hustling in his own zone. His game is built around, you know, putting some pucks in the net and doing that. Like, that's his job. That's what he'll do if he gets to the NHL. But I think he still needs to work on the well-rounded game. Can get beat in the puck races a little from time to time. Sometimes will be maybe too much of a watcher out there. But I think just from the raw talent right now, he's getting into a good spot.
He's kind of like perfecting the things that he's good at right now. And the rest is going to hopefully come.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. I watched him at the yesterday against that Slovakia team. It felt like a different player than what I watched in London, because I've seen him in London and it does feel like, I don't know, he feels like just a power play option and he's not really that dominant even strength, but I don't know. Yesterday he was flying. Like, he was a different player almost.
Yeah. It's like give him the space and he'll make it work. I think there's still a bit of an adjustment for him trying to figure out the OHL ice, but we didn't get to see really what he was capable of last year with HIFK, and didn't score one assist, didn't play a whole lot, but against his own group, like his own age group, he really looked good. He was a very difficult player to play against. It's going to be an interesting thing to see how he does translate to the NHL, because he will not be the biggest player every single night. He will not be the strongest player every single night, but the raw talent makes me excited that if he could just work with the coaches to develop the rest of his game, I think he'll be more than just a human wrecking ball with a shot that looks stupidly powerful every time he takes it.
Yeah. The old time hockey, and Kasper Holtonen is strong, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Except that he doesn't fight. He sounds a lot like this would be an old callback for Sharks fans, but like sounds like Link Gates. But Link Gates. He's got to add some fisticuffs to that, though.
I love it. Is there anybody else from the Sharks prospect pool that you want to talk about or shout out that you can think of?
Well, you know, shout out to Cameron Lund for having a decent season this year. A guy that I think with this 6'2" frame and the defensive capabilities there, I like what he brings to the table there. Wasn't a USA World Junior, you know, threat to me. I didn't think he was going to make the team, but just, you know, a guy that works hard and that type of energy, that type of size, could carve out a decent pro career out of that.
Yep. Yeah, no, I guess my question. Oh, go ahead, Keegan.
No, okay. So I guess one more guy that didn't make Team Canada was Luca Cagnoni after his, like, I don't know, like 30 points in 20 games or whatever he had. Is it really just kind of like he's small? Is that kind of the answer?
Yeah, like he does have a bit of tenacity to him, but they didn't like for you would have to even for all the offense. Yeah, he needed to be a bit better defensively, have a bit more size to really have had a chance on this team, because like he would have had to fight out for like a spot against Noah Warren, who's 6'5" and very good defensively and has the things that Cagnoni's missing. I'm a big fan of his game. I wrote a story about him on draft day saying like, this guy could be one of the bigger steals, I think. He got drafted, what was it? Yeah, fourth round.
Ooh, fourth round, 123.
Yeah, should have been drafted much higher than that. But his lack of size does hurt. And I know that there's more smaller defensemen we're seeing in the NHL come through, but that's still not the norm. It's still tough for a guy like him to really shine through without being like a superb, outstanding own zone player, which I feel like there are too many times where he's focused on trying to shoot the puck more than defend.
And my last question is just where would you rank the Shark system compared to the rest of the NHL? Is it still many years of darkness for Sharks fans, or do you have a ray of light to bring us?
I think I can't remember where I put them in my draft or my prospect pool ranking.
Oh, not good, guys.
No, but it was like top five. I'm pretty sure. Like,
oh, really?
Okay. I actually legitimately think that there's enough talent. Maybe top lower 10, than top five. It was top 10 for sure. That's for sure. I think Will Smith gives it so much validity.
Yeah.
Big question for me. Who's going to be the goalie of the future for the team?
Me.
Yeah. I'll play goalie. I'm good in NHL 24. I can do it.
Hugo Haviland. We signed him as a free agent.
Yeah.
Hugo Haviland's taller than me.
Yeah. He doesn't, you know, get over the crossbar, but, you know, like, sure, why not? And this year's draft's not going to really change that. I think they got to start putting towards that. And you guys would know better than me, but obviously you see what Blackwood's doing this year. This feels like the Blackwood that many Canadians thought would make him the starting goalie for the Olympics had they played in 2022. And it fell flat in those years in Devils, but it's nice to see him really find this game again. So maybe he's the guy. Maybe they trade him. I don't know. They got to figure out that option. That's the one thing they're missing, because they're a much better prospect group than they were heading into the NHL trade deadline last year. Getting Mukka Madulin helped. Henry Throne, I like him. Like, they've added some key pieces. They just need a goalie at this point.
Yeah, a couple more. And Mack with Celebrini. That one hurt.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, if you don't get him, like, yeah, you get, let's say you get Eichmann. Let's say you get Demidov. Like, hey, we missed out on Michkov. We're not making that mistake again.
I guess I have one more to close then with, just with Celebrini. Where do you kind of see his, like, where would Celebrini go in the 2023 draft?
Top three, I think.
Top three still? Okay.
I'm not sure if I like him more than Fantilli at this point. I would pick him just above Michkov. And I think with me, like, did you like watching Jonathan Toews in his prime era? Like, that's what you get with Celebrini, except Celebrini also hits a bit more, too. A guy that the players love having around. They view him as a leader. Mm-hmm. Just so smart. You look at the numbers. They're incredible. The skill, it's incredible. Like, the goal he scored to win bronze at the U18s, he did that with, like a great move, deked out the goalie with a injured shoulder. Like, what? This guy's got so much talent. He's the real deal. And, you know, every year it's always like, oh, that first pick, you expect so much great things. But I feel more confident about him than I felt over Lafreniere to a point. Shane Wright, even though he didn't go first overall in 2022, but should have. Things like that. I think Celebrini's just, he's a complete package at this point.
Okay.
Guess I got one more before we get you out of here. Sure. There's a bunch of, I guess, or defenders in the like top 15 or so in this 2024 draft. Do you have a favorite so far?
I had this conversation with Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News yesterday, and it's tough. On one hand, Anton Siliev, 6'7" defenseman who knows how to skate and produce offensively, playing almost 20 minutes a night in the KHL. That's pretty impressive. I think Zane Parekh is a blast to watch. I hate you describing somebody as fun to watch as a prospect because that feels like that's not really analysis. But sure. Zane Parekh will always do something every game that's like highlight reel worthy. Like that's, he's a very fun defenseman that way. But Zeev Bouyam's really kind of growing on me here. You look at what Lane Hutson was able to do last year, and Zeev Bouyam's kind of doing the same thing this year in college at Denver. And he's going to play a big role in this U.S. team. So obviously of those three guys, he's the only one playing the World Juniors this year, but he was a 2005 born, a late born guy. So he got the full 2 years of junior before going to college. So he has a bit of an up there, but I think those are the three guys. If I had to pick one right now, I think the sky high potential of Siliev is interesting because you don't get guys who are that big, can skate like that and that offensively aware at 6'7". That doesn't happen. So I'd say
going back to Russia
right now.
Going back to Russia. That's it.
It's a slippery slope when you're looking at guys when you don't know if they're coming over anytime soon, right? So
yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a danger there. And I think I guess it's kind of comparable to Dmitry Simashev last year. I mean, their games are a little bit different, but huge guy, could skate really well.
Yeah, I like him more than Simashev. I guess the one thing I'll say about Russian prospects is there's always the concern if they come over or not. I actually can't remember the last like high quality prospect to not come over. So if that helps, it seems like all the actual sure bet NHL players do eventually make it over.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking our ear off all about the future of the San Jose Sharks, which is bright and gonna involve Max Celebrini. Top 10.
Thank you for coming on and being fun to watch, Steven.
Yeah, thank you guys. You know, again, it's been fun legitimately watching Sharks games this year because you never know what's going to happen in a given game. But I do think the future's bright. But, in, you know, get used to maybe another couple more years of this. A couple more
sounds
years
like
of
it.
Terror.
A little darkness, my old
get
friend.
Ready for it because it'll pay off in the end.
Yeah, love it. All right, let's get you out of here. Bye.
Yeah, thanks, Steven.
Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.